and welcome to episode 15 of season 9 of Movie Room Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki our way through the Die Hard duo, the final two Die Hard movies that are not part of the trilogy, Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off his stint and this week is Nick Rehack of the Rabbit Hole Podcast. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thank you for having me back, Rob.
Thank you for wanting to come back. You know, we didn't want to leave people in the lurch. You know, we got to figure out what's going on here.
Yeah, we don't want to leave anybody hanging, you know?
No, not at all. So episode 15 begins with John looking for a way out and ends with Bowman becoming quite concerned. So yesterday we basically left things with John deciding to drive his car, or drive the car that he has stolen, into a wall with Mai still hanging on to the hood, and they end up in an elevator shaft, facing downwards. Not a very pleasant moment for Mai or for John, for that matter. John sort of doesn't know what he got himself into here. And, you know, this minute begins with where we finished yesterday's segment with the look down into this elevator shaft. And, you know, we see Mai kicking around a little bit in the back, but John figures that he's got to figure out a way out. So he starts trying to pull himself up inside of the car. And then we get an outside shot, and we see the way she's just rock climbing that SUV. Yeah. He's doing it from the outside. She's going much faster than he is, and he's on the inside. You know, he's got where to grip, but she's just moving forward really, really fast. So they do this nicely. And you know, she starts pulling on the ropes to try and get herself up, and John is trying to push open the back door. And then we see the power cables snap, and the car starts its journey downwards. You know, they do the typical movie thing. We have wheels spinning, and you know, there's a lot of smoke coming out from the way that everything is spinning so fast and whatever. And you can see that John is pushed back down into the car, but she's not. She's still holding on really well to the whole thing. You'd think she would have gotten rope burns on her hands from this whole thing. From hanging onto those power cables, having it
something,
slide.
And there's steel. It should be cutting her left and right.
Yeah, I mean, we saw what the steel thing did in Die Hard with a Vengeance. It cut a guy in two.
Yeah,
you know, she's holding onto it. Yeah, I don't know about that. And then she basically does a flying kick inside of the SUV and kicks John out of it, and John hangs onto the door. Which is pretty nice to see John doing this. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, this is the action hero John. This is not the diehard type of John guy.
Right.
Where he's just lifting himself up to try to get back into the car. And
yeah.
Then he reaches the point where he reaches up to where she is, and then she punches him in the face, and he falls backwards and grabs onto the cables. And then when he swings back, he's able to take the cables and you know, put them around her neck. And John goes, "Let's just talk about this for one." And then after he puts it around her neck, he goes, "How you doing? That's not too tight, is it? Huh? Huh?" Again, it's the urge to have to, you know, throw out these comments along the way.
Yeah.
Things like
that. Because I think it also becomes a psychological thing, too.
Yeah. It's true. And she basically finds a way to break free and, you know, moves back, like kicks backwards and is out of the way. And then John gets into the car and the two of them start fighting. He hits her in the face again, sort of knocks her out. And once again, says, "Smile pretty." And then John continues to try to climb out of this SUV. Again, typical from the movie standpoint, they show us how this car is slowly moving. You know, not necessarily it's not stuck. It's going to unwedge itself shortly. We see actually the second henchman show up, and he finally gets to the top of this shaft and looks down towards where John is, and starts shooting at John, and breaks the glass of the windshield in the back, which shatters down onto John and also onto Mai. Doesn't this guy think about the fact that Mai is there, or he doesn't really care? He's like, yeah, she's a ruthless bitch anyway, so who cares?
Yeah, probably that part.
Yeah, and the guy just keeps shooting and starts to we see all the bullet holes in the back of the front seat of the car, and then we see a shot from behind this guy shooting down, and then out of nowhere we just see Farrell come with a metal bar and just smashes the guy in the back, and he just
Bam.
topples over and just falls into the onto the top of the car, and we see that his gun falls into the car. And then the body just gravity takes control, and the body just goes down. And Farrell then, stands in the entrance to the shaft, just looking down. And he goes, McClane? And then he sees what's going on, and we see they give us a shot of Mai opening her eyes a little bit. And then when Matt looks down, he goes, "Oh, shit. McClane, get out of there! Come on, man! Come on! Come on, man! Oh, God!" Because obviously Farrell has a better vantage point of what's going on here than anyone else. But Mai actually got the gun, her henchman's gun, landing right next to her, and she picks it up and starts aiming it towards John. As John tries to crawl out of the thing, and she aims it, and then he grabs onto the cable, and as he grabs the cable, the car just lets go and just flies down the shaft with Mai in it. And I think this you've talked the last few days about the fact that this feels to you like a James Bond type movie in some ways. This shot of Mai looking down as the car is flying down is definitely a James Bond type of shot. There's no
Yeah,
question about that.
it really is. And it even feels to an extent like in this case, John McClane is James Bond, and that's like the main villain's like top henchman that he just disposed of on his way to fight the main villain. That's what this fight feels like.
Correct. Which he sort of did. This is the henchman,
Exactly. Yep.
So it makes a lot of sense. And John is able to finally make his way up and extricate himself as we see the car go all the way down to the bottom of the shaft. And just the explosion is it might be extreme, but it's still nice. And I love the fact that once again this makes it seem like a typical Die Hard moment, because you have Farrell standing on top of the shaft looking down, which we've seen John do. And then Farrell goes, "Did you see that?" And he starts giving like a big laugh and a triumphant type of yell as he's watching this whole thing, and John is ecstatic also.
Yeah.
And then they spare us from having to see John climb up the rope. And then John says, "So you stopped it, right?" And Farrell goes, Yeah. Actually, having a gun to your head makes it harder to do this kind of work." "What? I know that comes as a surprise."
So my thing about that is he comes out and he's just concerned about with what's happening and if he's able to get him to stop it or not. At no point does he say like a smart alecky remark. There's no fun reply to Matthew. He just kind of laughs and he doesn't, and it just feels like of all the moments throughout the entire film, you don't make a comment on that moment for what just happened.
Correct. It must have
Like
been
that.
cut out. My assumption is that there was something here and they just cut it out.
They had to have, because I see that I'm just like, what are we like? Come on now. Like it had to have been something.
Don't know. And then the two of them continue, and then Farrell goes, "Oh," and he goes, "You can't just turn it off. Just lock them out." He goes, "I'm not sure. I might be able to allow to slow them down, though." It's funny because we talked about the fact that John is not a technophile, but on the other hand, he has basic ideas of what's needed to be done.
Yeah.
And Farrell doesn't need to explain to him in detail what he wants, what his plan is. He just says, "I might be able to slow them down." That's it. And they do an amazing transition shot here because we see the screen, and then we move away from the screen, and we see that it's Trey is on the other side. And then Trey says to Gabriel, "Western and Central hubs are ours. We're just waiting on Mai's end." And then they realize something's a little strange, and he goes, "Hey, something's up. All the security's reactivating." Because Farrell is able to actually finally do something. But this line that he says basically shows that their whole plan is to take over everything nationally. We're not even just talking about a specific spot.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the East Coast. This is the entire thing. So it makes you wonder who they sent to the central and western hubs to take care of the exact same thing that Mai just said.
Ooh. Yeah, and did the other ones go through, and how are we not hearing about that versus these ones? That's interesting. I never thought about that before.
That's right.
That's interesting.
That's right. So Trey's a little concerned here. He isn't sure what's going on. He sees that access restricted, and then we're back with Farrell, who is grinning like a giddy schoolboy with what he wants to do. And he goes, "I think someone might be in the market for some cheap Viagra." He goes, "Why don't you take some of that? Now that your girlfriend's dead, why don't you check out our 60 singles that you can chat with?" And then we see Trey's screen, and he goes, "It's an E-bomb." So it's an interesting way for Farrell to take out his revenge here by sending an E-bomb. Does an E-bomb work the way that he's showing it here? I don't know. For me, this makes it seem to me that if someone has a virus, you do that. But it's not, maybe there is a way of sending it this way. I don't know.
Or maybe rather than just like to say virus or anything like that, to make it sound a little more not fancy, but maybe a little more tense or intense would be to call it an e-bomb. I mean, really, that's all it is just like a quasi virus that's just like having pop-ups and stuff illicitly showing up. But
Correct.
yeah, it's nothing crazy.
Exactly. So Farrell mentions Viagra. Okay. Do you know what the official medical term is for the drug Viagra?
I do not.
Sildenafil.
Huh.
Yeah.
So why not? Okay.
It's a drug that was originally created for other purposes than what most people nowadays think of Viagra for. It's originally was being used to treat hypertension and heart attacks and things like that.
Okay.
And dealing with problems with cardiovascular disease and stuff like that. And
Yeah.
they realize that one of these side effects is a prolonged erection, which is known as a priapism.
Okay, I didn't know that that's what that was called. Okay.
Yes. And so there are ways so it has now it's mainly used to help sexual dysfunction. And basically it's a pill that you can take, or you can take an injection, or there's another way of having a pill that will dissolve under the tongue. And usually when you take a pill, it takes about 20 minutes for the medication to kick in and lasts for about 2 hours. There are side effects that you can get headaches, heartburn, flushed skin. Anyone who has cardiovascular disease, it can be very dangerous. You can start losing your vision. You can have hearing loss. And anyone who is a nitric oxide donor that sorry, anyone taking like a nitroglycerin tablet or things like that, it could cause a serious drop in blood pressure, which can cause a lot of problems. The medication was discovered by Pfizer in 1989 when they were trying to find a treatment for angina, which is basically heartburn. And
Okay.
they it eventually was approved for use in the US in 1998.
Damn.
And as of now, it is known as the it is the 157th most commonly prescribed medication in the US, with more than 3 million prescriptions a year.
3 billion, and that only makes it the 157th.
Yes. 3 million, not billion, million.
Oh, okay. That never mind then. Okay.
Million,
Whew. I
million.
was gonna say, oh my goodness.
Yes. It can also be used as an antidepressant for men with erectile dysfunction. It can be used for pulmonary hypertension.
Wow, okay.
It can help markers in the disease. It doesn't change the risk of death or serious side effects, but still is helpful there. It can be used for altitude sickness.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I all right, what okay.
It can be used to stop a high altitude pulmonary edema. And so, like I said, it the different types of side effects could be headaches, flushing, indigestion, nasal congestion, impaired vision. It can cause blurred vision also, which could be somewhat of a problem if you might need your vision for what you want to use it
Just
for. I don't know.
little bit, not
I
by
don't
much,
know.
but just a little bit.
Slightly. And it could cause severe low blood pressure. It could cause prolonged erections, which could be a problem also.
Little bit.
It can cause heart attacks. It can cause strokes.
Well, that's called strokes, all right.
Yes, that's true. Strokes in the brain. Strokes in the brain.
Oh, gotcha.
Exactly. So usually if you take the pill, on average it takes 27 minutes for it to really kick in. But it can range anywhere between 12 and 70 minutes. And if you put it under your tongue, then the average time it takes is 15 minutes, and it lasts for an average of 40 minutes.
Okay.
And it was originally synthesized in England by a chemist named Simon Campbell. And like I said, the idea originally was to help angina, but didn't really work that way. But it makes the annual sales of Viagra. It peaked in 2008 at $2 billion in one
Oh
year.
my gosh.
Yeah. Now,
Wow, that's a lot.
Viagra is the one of the most common counterfeited pills on the market.
Oh, I imagine so.
Apparently, 80% of places that sell Viagra were found to be counterfeits.
Whoa.
Yes.
Whoa. That is not a little.
My assumption is that most people, that's if you're buying it online or something and not buying it over the counter. I'm assuming
Well,
if
yeah,
you go
because
to
how
the
many guys want to
drugstore.
go? Yeah, no one wants to do that.
That's right. I'm assuming if you go to the drugstore, the 20% of the people that go to the drugstore are getting the real stuff. And it is the most seized drugs by Interpol. There are 22% of the seizures of drugs that Interpol catches are Viagra drugs.
Sheesh.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
Yeah, definitely is. So at this point, Farrell sends the E-bomb, And Trey, we see his screen with a whole bunch of different stuff just popping up about Barely Legal, seeking sexy singles, Viagra ads. Whoever put together these screens probably had a blast putting it all together
Oh, yeah.
with the whole thing. Even sends him a list of one of the ads says looking for pills, and there's a whole bunch of list of different pills and how much each of them costs, but none of them are Viagra. But Farrell is completely thrilled that he's able to do this.
The look on his face is just like I wrote down, devilish smile.
Yes, that's right. That's what it is. He's back in his original atmosphere.
Yeah.
He knows this is his comfort zone, doing this type of
Yeah,
stuff.
weirdly.
Well, again, he's a computer hacker. What do you expect?
That's true. It's true.
That I don't fault him for thinking that way. And then
No.
the phone starts to ring. And John and Farrell slightly argue. I don't know if argue story where they tease each other as to who's supposed to answer it. And then John goes, "Hey, he says, all right, wait, 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 wait." And then he opens the phone, and we hear Gabriel's voice on the side going, "My, talk to me. What's going on?" "My," and he goes, "Oh yeah, little lazy chick, likes to kick people. I don't think she's going to be talking to anybody for a really long time. Last time I saw her, she was at the bottom of the elevator shaft with an SUV rammed up her ass." Then John waits a second and goes, "What's the matter? Cat got your tongue? Listen, jackass, your fire sale is over. So pack up your little circus, or I'm going to come and I'm going to kick your ass." John's got a lot of confidence by
He
talking.
almost too much. There's some points where I'm just like, John, don't do this.
That's
It's gonna come back to bite you.
Well, he's especially when he's talking on the phone, he knows that he's far away, so he doesn't really need to, he doesn't need to be concerned that the guy's in the next room. He also doesn't know if she has more henchmen or not. There's no
Right,
way that
right.
he knows that there's only two there, so that's also a little strange. His confidence from that perspective, you'd think that he would he again, he needs to have these quips. I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. And I think some of it too is maybe to convince himself a little bit or to be a little more okay with not really understanding like the technical side of things. So if in a way to, like you said, or like we talked about, like a psychological thing, not just to put the other person down, but to build himself up too.
It's true. And then we actually get Gabriel's response, and he says, "You have no idea who I am or what I'm capable of. When I'm finished here, and I promise it'll be soon, I will focus all of my attention on you. You want to make these things personal? Fine." Dun dun dun. John isn't really 100% sure where he's gotten himself into with this whole thing. As this is all happening, so Farrell is able to take a screenshot of the face of Gabriel, so that they have an idea as to who this is. So John does a good job of distracting him, that he doesn't know that a picture is being taken of him. But Gabriel was also able to see John at the same time. We're back to that old Skype that they used in 2007, I guess, in order to be able to look at one another. And he sees it's John. He doesn't necessarily know who John is, but he knows it's John. He knows that. Oh, actually, he knows who John is because he's already talked to him. And he's sure it's John. But John doesn't know who he's talking to. That's what it comes down to. And Gabriel's pretty cocky also by saying that you have no idea who you're dealing with. But you can see the pain on his face about that Maya is gone.
Yeah, it really stuck with him. And for the most part in the film, up until now, like Timothy Oliphant doesn't really have that expression. It's always just like
He's emotional.
confidence.
He's emotionless.
Yeah, too. Yeah, absolutely. And this one, we start to see a little bit of it come through, but part of me wanted like more. Now, I don't know if that means I wanted to see more emotion out of him, but like when he threatens them and he's just like, you don't know who I am, what I'm capable of. I didn't believe him when he said it. I was just like, yeah, okay, all the bad guys say that. I wanted something a little bit like menacing, maybe isn't the word, but I just wanted something more from him in that moment.
Right. Okay. I can agree with that. That makes sense. And then Gabriel basically turns off the monitor very quickly. And we see him sitting there in his office, and Trey sees him, and Trey's not happy. Trey knows that you don't want to deal with a pissed off boss. That's more or less what it comes down to. And then he gets up and bangs on the table, and we see all the hackers are feeling very uncomfortable.
Oh yeah.
And then he walks over to them, and he gets as close as possible, and he says to Trey, he says, "Reroute every cubic foot of natural gas in the pipelines to that station." And again, he just said moments ago that he wants to he's going to focus attention on him afterwards, but he just changed his mind in those few seconds.
Oh, after it came very quickly.
That's right. That is true. And then John, we're back with John and Farrell, and John goes, "Can you get Bowman on this thing?" "You're sure, I can get anyone on it." He goes, "Okay, do it." He goes, "Now?" "Yes, now." Farrell's a little out of it that he doesn't realize that John wants this immediately.
Yeah.
And then we see that they upload the photo, and it's being sent to Bowman, who we get a shot of him. And he goes, "Please, no." And first of all, I gotta say, I love where this segment ends because we
Yeah.
only see half of Gabriel's face. Just
It
the
is
eyes.
rather cool.
The fact that Bowman can see just his eyes at this point, and he's like, "No, don't let it be that guy. Not him. Anyone but him."
Yeah.
So I like the way that they do that. I also like the fact that John actually thought of the idea of asking Farrell to patch things through to Bowman. But how would he so easily get into Bowman's computer and have Bowman already on the screen and know it's them and not be you'd think that the amount of security on the computers has gone up around Bowman during these last during the events of this movie so far.
You would think, but maybe not, because if networks are going down left and right, they're constantly scrambling and having to change their setting due to whatever's happening. They might just be saying whatever works works, whether it's secure or not, and they're just kind of rolling with it. And it's interesting to look at it too. And John is very analog, whereas Matthew is digital. And to see analog and digital coming together to, work through these issues and make stuff happen. It's kind of a fun metaphor in that way. And that we'll never truly be a digital society. We're always going to need the analog side of things. And of course, we'll never really be an analog society ever again because the digital side of things has made just so much more advances and conveniences and things.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, nowadays most people don't use much analog with very many things. Yeah. And that's how this segment ends. So, Nick, did you have anything else you wanted to just add about these three segments that we've talked about, or anything about the movie in general?
The only other thing I wanted to add was, and I can't remember if I said this already. I don't think I did, but just how the moment when McLean is holding on and the van or the SUV just comes falling through him and he's just left holding on to the wires and everything reminded me a lot of Lost World Jurassic Park. Very
Okay.
similar scene when a character is holding on to a wire and a vehicle falls around them down into a pit. And I'm also kind of surprised that the fire didn't come farther up the tunnel, because that typically would happen where a character is excited, sees the fire coming up, oh no, and then scrambles to get out of the shaft.
Which again is what he did in the original Die Hard. After
Exactly. So.
he threw the chair with the explosives down into the shaft, and there was so much there was some the flames reached his floor, and he was on the 32nd floor at that time.
Yeah.
So, you know, and John is not on the 32nd floor. He's let's say there's 5 or 6 floors on this building, maximum. I
Yeah.
wouldn't even I would even argue that there's less, but still.
And even then, that would make him think like, oh, I know how this is gonna end. I should boogie instead of just sitting there laughing, but I don't know.
All right, excellent. So today's segment is a game called
Ooh.
Six Degrees of Bruce Willis. So I'm assuming that you're familiar with the idea of 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
I am, yes.
The idea being that you can connect any two actors or any actor with Kevin Bacon within 6 moves. So I've made a game which I'm going to give you the name of an actor, and you have to connect them to Bruce Willis in as few moves as possible. Okay. So there's 5 of these. Your first actor is Paul Giamatti. How would you connect Paul Giamatti to Bruce Willis?
How would I connect Paul Giamatti to Bruce Willis? Let's see. Wow, okay. Paul Giamatti. Oh, Paul Giamatti. Paul Giamatti was in The Illusionist with Edward Norton, who was in Moonrise Kingdom with Bruce Willis.
Excellent. That is great. The one I got, and it's also within 2 moves, was Paul Giamatti was in Saving Mr. Banks with Colin Farrell, who was in Hearts War with Bruce Willis.
Ooh, okay, good pull, good
Yeah.
pull.
All right. Excellent. So the next one is Peter Weller, RoboCop.
Oh man, okay, good. I'm glad you said that because zero idea.
You didn't remember who Peter Weller was, or?
Now I do that he was in RoboCop, but I couldn't tell you who else is in RoboCop. That's gonna
He's been in
suck.
other movies too.
All right. Well, Peter Weller, or I'm thinking Welker. All right. Let's see. Peter Weller was in RoboCop. I don't know who else is in RoboCop.
So think of another
I can't.
movie that he's been in.
No, I can't. That's the only thing I can think of Peter Weller was in was RoboCop. Was in Star Trek Into Darkness. And that also had Benedict Cumberbatch. And Benedict Cumberbatch was in Benedict Cumberbatch was in Marvel's Avengers Endgame. That opens it wide open for me here.
Completely.
All right, so once we're in Endgame, now how do we get Bruce Willis in there? So let's think. So we're in Endgame. Bruce Willis could have been in. I don't want to. I don't know if he was in that. Oh gosh. Can I actually let me take a step back. Benedict Cumberbatch was in Avengers Infinity War with Samuel L. Jackson, who was Nick Fury, and he was in Unbreakable with Bruce Willis.
Okay, Unbreakable, Pulp Fiction, Die Hard with Vengeance, perfect. That's great. Okay, so the two I got was Peter Weller was in the movie called Rainbow Drive with David Caruso, who was in Hudson Hawk with Bruce Willis. And the second one is Peter Weller was in Star Trek Into Darkness with Carl Urban, who was in Red with Bruce
Oh
Willis.
wow, I could have just made a quicker jump, huh?
Okay, and we can even go further and say that Peter Weller was in Star Trek Into Darkness with Leonard Nimoy, who was in Armageddon with Bruce Willis. He did the voiceover in
I
Armageddon.
didn't know that.
Yes.
That's
Okay.
a fun fact.
The next one is Kathleen Turner.
Kathleen Turner. Okay. So Kathleen Turner to Bruce Willis. How are we gonna go with Kathleen Turner? Because I only really know her from what's the it's the one with what's his face? The Stone movie with Douglas.
Romancing the
So
Stone.
it's the end. So okay, so Romancing the Stone with Michael Douglas. Now let's get Michael Douglas to Bruce Willis. Michael Douglas was in I don't want to cheat and go to the same wells.
You
So I want,
can.
I mean, I know I can, but it's not as
Not
fun.
cheating. It's not as fun. I agree with you. It's not
Well,
cheating.
the easy one would be to say Romancing the Stone, Michael Douglas, and then to Avengers Endgame with Michael Douglas because he was Hank Pym in one of the flashbacks. And then obviously Sam Jackson to, or no, because Sam Jackson wasn't in Endgame. Okay,
He's
so
in
we'll go with
Endgame.
that.
He's in
He
Endgame.
is in Endgame? Oh,
That's
that's
right.
right. He's at the thing at the end.
That's right.
I always forget about that.
That's right.
That it's always that last little part because it reminds me a lot of like the Lord of the Rings. How there's like, you know, a couple different endings. So yeah, Sam Jackson, who was in that, who was with him in Pulp Fiction. But I want to see if I could do it another way. But I think for the sake of time and editing, I'll just go with Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner romancing the stone into Avengers Endgame with Sam Jackson into Pulp Fiction with Bruce Willis.
All right, so the ones that I got was Kathleen Turner was an Undercover Blues with Chris Ellis, who was in this movie, Live Free or Die Hard, with Bruce Willis. And then another one is she was in that same movie, Undercover Blues, with Saul Rubinick, who was in The Bonfire of the Vanities with Bruce
Oh,
Willis.
okay.
Okay, so your next one is Ally Sheedy.
Ally Sheedy. Man, that should be easier. Should is the word. Let's see. Okay. Ally Sheedy was in War Games with Matthew Broderick. And Matthew Broderick was in Ferris Bueller's. No, I'm going to. Hold on a second. I'm going the wrong way. Because I'm going back to Michael Douglas. And he's getting to Bruce Willis instead. All right. So Ally Sheedy. So it was Short Circuit. It was War Games. It was Breakfast Club. So maybe I do Ally Sheedy was in Breakfast Club with Emilio Estevez. I don't know much that Emilio Estevez was in outside of like Young Guns and let's do it the other way around. Bruce Willis was in Pulp Fiction. You've got Ving Rhames. You've got Uma Thurman. You've got I think Courtney Arquette. Not Courtney Arquette. One of the Arquettes is in there.
Roseanne Arquette.
That's who it is, Roseanne Arquette. Man. All right, let's so Bruce Willis,
You're missing the
Pulp
obvious.
Fiction. I feel like it's right in front of my face and it's gonna be a it's yeah. All right, going back to Brat Pack movies. We're thinking through because it was also she was also in that the fire one, St. Elmo's Fire. And that had more of them, Judge Reinhold. Oh man! And I even thought to myself too when I got the email. I'm like, yeah, let me take a look at his filmography. And I, you know, sat down and looked at what I had on my shelf versus what all I had elsewhere. Let's. Gosh, why am I making this so difficult on myself?
Keep working through it. You keep thinking of the actors in Brat Pack movies.
Anthony Michael Hall. Was no Anthony Michael Hall, Judd Nelson, Molly Ringwald, Die Hard, Die Hard 2. Okay. Ally Sheedy was in War Games with Matthew Broderick, who was in The Lion King alongside Jeremy Irons, who was in Die Hard with a Vengeance with Bruce Willis.
That is great. That was very nicely done. Okay,
We
but
got there.
there are simpler ones. There are simpler ones. Ally Sheedy was in St. Elmo's Fire with Demi Moore,
Wow. I
who.
completely, you know what? I never think of her as in the Brat Pack, so it didn't even
Okay,
cross my
and
mind.
she was in Mortal Thoughts with Bruce Willis.
Oh, she was in a lot more of that with Bruce Willis.
Yes, we're just talking about on screen.
Excuse me.
Also in St. Elmo's Fire, Andy McDowell was in St. Elmo's Fire with Ally Sheedy, who was in Hudson Hawk with Bruce Willis.
Okay.
And the final one, which is the one you're going to really kick yourself on, Ally Sheedy was in The Breakfast Club with Paul Gleason, who was in the original Die Hard with Bruce Willis.
And you know, it's things like that where I wonder to myself, Nick, what are you really doing? Are you really a film guy? Or are you just making it up as you go?
No, you're good. You're good. You're good.
You know what the worst part is? I kept seeing his face and I'm like, no, he wasn't in Die Hard.
Right. Now the final one, which hopefully won't be the most difficult one for you, is Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke. Okay. So Dick Van Dyke was in, oh, come on. It was, he was in, oh God, A Night at the Smithsonian.
A Night at the Museum, okay, yeah.
Night at the Museum, damn it. Night at the Museum, Battle for the Smithsonian.
Okay.
No, he was in Night at the Museum. Ben Stiller is in there. And with Ben Stiller. Okay. So he was in Night at the Museum. Excuse me. Dick Van Dyke was in Night at the Museum with Ben Stiller. Ben Stiller was in Meet the Parents with Robert De Niro. And Robert De Niro and Bruce Willis were in a film called What Just Happened.
Very good. Very good. Okay, so the ones that I got is Dick Van Dyke was in Night in the Museum with Owen Wilson, who was in Breakfast of Champions with Bruce Willis. Dick Van Dyke was in Mary Poppins Returns with Emily Blunt, who was in Looper with Bruce Willis. Dick Van Dyke was in Dick Tracy with Madonna, who was in Four Rooms with Bruce Willis.
He was in Four Rooms, that's right.
And Dick Van Dyke was also in was in Dick Tracy with Dustin Hoffman, who was in Billy Bathgate with Bruce Willis.
I've never heard of that movie.
Okay, that's
That
fair.
sounds fun, though.
Bathgate or Dick Tracy?
The movie, Billy Bathgate.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's not that great of a movie.
Dick, say Dick Tracy, I've heard, but not the Billy one.
Right, okay. Got it. Okay, great. That was nicely done. And once again, we will play State Your Motto. And this time we will talk about the motto of the District of Columbia. Okay, so your three choices are A, by valor in arms, B, under God the people rule, or C, justice for all.
Let me get them. I think I want to go with and ju or justice for all, but let me hear three one more or all three one more time.
Okay, A is by valor in arms, B is under God the people rule. And C is justice for all.
Every time I've gone with my gut, I've gotten it wrong, and my gut is telling me to, under God, people rule or whatever. But so I'm going to go with justice for all.
And you are correct.
Hey, for once.
It sounds like a superhero thing, which
It
is
kind of
funny.
does, doesn't it?
Which is funny that it's called DC, DC Comics, possibly.
Ah, an old Detective Comics. I
Yeah,
see.
there
I see.
you go. All right. Thank you very much for playing. Nick, would you like to once again for the final time this part of the season to tell people where they can find Nick Rehack?
Absolutely. They can find me over at rabbitholepodcasts.com. You could find me on a show with Jason Soto called Play MST for Me. We are going through every single episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000. He has seen every episode. I haven't seen a one. As of this recording, we're up to episode 42. So I technically have seen 42 episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000, but we are onward and upward to the rest. There's also Lyrical Innuendo. Bubba Wheat and myself, we take a look at a song, we look at its lyrics, we scrutinize its lyrics, understand its lyrics, and we try to figure out, is this song about sex, drugs, or is it just good old-fashioned rock and roll? I love hanging out with those guys. I love being on the programs with those guys. So check those both of those out. Lyrical Innuendo, Lyrical Innuendo, Play MST for Me over at rabbitholepodcasts.com.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@moveyourob.net. So, Nick, thank you very much for joining me for the demise of my.
Thank you for having me for the device of mine.
And I will be back on Monday with a new guest, but until then, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one.